Hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 7, lucky 7 for many, of the Johnny and Josh Show in season 3. Can you believe it? October is upon us. Has it really been 7 months since episode 1? Well, the 2022 regular season is well and truly over, but thankfully we are not, and I'm joined by two of my favourite baseball brothers. JC's in the house and Eric the producer. Good evening, boys.
What's up, Gouldy? How about the start to the postseason? I mean, it's been a cracker.
I'm loving it. And obviously my team's not even involved because we're divisional title holders and we get a layoff and we go out and sunbathe and take 5 days off. But I have to say, I've been loving it. And we're obviously going to get to that later on. But I've had a few late nights, and considering how busy I am elsewhere, career JG, it's not the best thing for me to be doing right now, watching live baseball.
You got to prioritize, Gouldy. That's okay. It's okay, absolutely, buddy. Absolutely. Your love for baseball needs to always come first.
JC, all I can say is thank God my manager and partner, the lovely Lulabelle, has no idea that I'm staying up watching late night baseball, because she'd be furious, because I need my sleep. As you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, JC.
You're just getting older every day, Gouldy.
Certainly am. episode 7, buddy. Lucky for some. Obviously, we like to traditionally kick things off with a slight biblical reference. And as you, I'm sure, both know, 7 is the number of completeness and perfection. How appropriate is that for the Johnny and Josh Show? And that's both physical and spiritual. And it derives much of its meaning from being tied directly to God's creation of all things. Now, I always feel a little uneasy with the fact that I'm very much focusing on a Christian and biblical approach to my number 7 spiritual moment. So I would like just to say that ancient beliefs of all sides from around the world believe that the 7th son of the 7th son would be gifted with magical powers. And here's the bad news, both good and evil. Now, neither of you are the 7th sons, I'm hoping.
That was like a lot. That was a mystery wrapped in a riddle surrounded by
7th son of the 7th son. Who has 7 sons? Who then has 7 sons? I mean, what are the odds? You tell me, what are the odds of having 7 sons and the 7th one also has 7 sons?
Oh, by the way, I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
Oh, someone needs a hug. Anyway, someone needs a hug.
We're like 5 minutes into the show. You're talking to Josh. Like, I'm just plant a corner with him.
All right, buddy. Well, I tell you what, I'll focus the first question for you. Notable sevens. Now, there's a few, but only one true notable. The legend that is Mickey Mantle. Go on, Eric. Take it away.
I think, you know, because, okay, yeah, there's Craig Biggio, there's Pudge Rodriguez, who are also donned the number 7 in their career. But there, I guess, should it be apropos that I throw in this little song, this little ditty, Johnny?
Mickey who?
You know who, the fellow with the celebrated swing. Oh, I love Mickey.
Mickey who?
You know who, the one who drives me batty every spring.
Mickey Mantle. You know, Mickey Mantle, I think he's the only notable number 7, right?
All right, so Eric, I know you're going to do a trivia question later, but let's give a little bonus here. What player wore number 7 more seasons than any other player in Major League Baseball history? Give me the top 4, or give me one in the top 4.
Do we do this now, or do we do this?
Hudge Rodriguez.
Wrong.
Okay. He had a long career. Mind you, he was a catcher, so it wasn't that long.
I'll go Biggio then.
Biggio, ding, ding, ding. Eric. Well, wow. The trivia meister. 19 seasons. Second was Mickey Mantle with 18 seasons. And then tied for third, two players at 16 seasons. They were Mark Belanger, who was before your time, Gouldy, your baseball time, longtime shortstop for the Orioles, and Jose Reyes.
Jose Reyes. Wow. Okay.
You forget he was around that long? Jeez, yeah.
Okay. Then you two need to now name the most famous number 7 from the NFL. This is my little trivia offer. John Elway. No, that's... Yes, indeed.
It's such a subjective statement.
He's one of the all-time greats. Okay, there's no question then. Who's the greatest number 7 in the world of football, or soccer, as our American cousins love to say? Come on, guys. He's still playing.
Go ahead.
Come on.
Tell us.
Cristiano Ronaldo, the greatest player in the history of the game.
CR7.
I didn't. Moving on. Okay. COVID update. Now, the COVID IL apparently does still exist, although I'm not really sure this is right, because Mike Clevenger, for instance, who is, as time of recording, still actually active in the postseason, is apparently ill, but they haven't actually said he's on the IL for COVID. It's one of those mystery affairs yet again. It's a very gray area. So I don't know. Is there any COVID IL? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's really no IL, right? Because you just leave him off the roster. You can always bring him back for the next series. So he was just excluded from the wild card series roster.
So but there is also, we've read somewhere that he definitely tested negative, and yet there's still the rumor abounds that actually it is COVID. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
So supposedly this strain, without getting too much into the science, there's a lag between testing positive and actually contracting it, more so than the previous strain.
Have you got the same strain over in the US as we've got over here? Because they're getting a bit worried over here. The numbers are up quite rapidly.
Yeah, numbers are up here. I got my booster yesterday. I've had
your ninth? Five?
Yeah, so I had two, two. Then I had two boosters early on, and this was first one.
I'm getting my fifth soon as well.
What?
I've been doing a lot of traveling. I'll be going to Canada in about a week or so as well. So I want to make sure that I'm all.
I love Eric's like, I would like to talk about myself now. You guys just ask me questions. So I'm going to work my way into
JC, we've got to go there. So what are you doing in Canada? You're going to see mommy and daddy. Is that what you're doing, Eric?
Yes, moving on.
Okay. Now, just before we get off the COVID issue, it does also bring up some other issues about attendance, by the way. I don't know if you saw this, but the good news is that the season's numbers is up significantly from last season, which was almost inevitable. Last season was horrific, 45.3 million, but it's back up to 64.6 million. Should we be concerned, though, that the last pre-COVID season, 2019, it was 68.5 million? So that's almost 4 million more across the board. Is that a cause for concern, JC?
Yeah, I absolutely do think so, Goldie. And the reason for that is people were emerging from COVID wanting to go out. I think there would probably be more enthusiasm for large sporting events and for going out, even more so than the reticence of like, oh, I don't want to be around people. And so I would have thought there would have been a massive spike, which there probably is. But the question is whether the audience is as big as it was a number of years ago. And I think next year will be a really telling moment for baseball as to whether it can once again sort of, you know, it's not going to be the number one sport in the U.S. That's just the reality of the situation. But whether I can start making the move in the right direction and get the trajectory going again.
I'm slightly concerned this is a maybe even a pandemic situation for all sport. And it certainly is.
But it's not just sport, Goldie, right? It's just a trend in humanity, right? People are working from home more. They're not going out quite as much because you don't have to. And you can sort of sit in your living room, do your work, watch your sport. I fear that that's sort of just a general trend. And we're all old fogies. So for us, it's like, well, you know, going to the game, it means so
everybody's much. Turning into Eric, JC. They're all sort of, you know, sitting there working in their pajamas, you know, having a bowl of cereal, not doing the washing up.
Yeah, wait, I've been
yeah, he's the one who's been out and about. if you want to slag someone off, that's more me. I've been working at home now for
I did four cities in 5 days recently, so I'm the super spreader.
Tell us more, Eric.
What am I laughing for? That's not a comment I should be laughing.
In the past 5 days I've been in Ljubljana, Slovenia. I've been in Salzburg. I've been in Cologne. Tomorrow I'm going to Norway. It's ice hockey season. So
trust me, we know, Eric, because you love to social media your trips.
I do. Yeah. Look where I am. Kick.
And we're his only two followers, so we're the only ones who actually know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, buddy, the one place you've not been is Canada, but you did mention you're going. What is the COVID update on the Canadian border?
Well, luckily, as of October 1st, they've waived the vaccine mandates. You don't have to fill in this thing called ArriveCan, which is to get into Canada to show your vaccine passports, although my vaccine passport's, you know, up to date, and it's easier to get in and out of Canada. More on that later on, because the playoffs started in Toronto.
Okay. I was in Canada 2 weeks ago, and I had to do ArriveCan and the whole thing, so I missed it by. It was, you know, it was good. I mean, it's good to be caring and concerned about these things, right?
Unlike Johnny. Moving on.
Well, we're not moving on because the most important thing right now is to focus on the whole concept of social media. And I'm obviously an expert, and that requires me to mention to you that this is called the Johnny and Josh Show. And we need you to pick us up. We need you to pick us up on social media. The YouTube videos are back. We'd love it if you could check out that channel, but we need you to subscribe, and we need you to point and hit buttons like. And press like and do all those things that you do, and hit a hashtag that says Johnny and Josh, etc.
Retweet.
Let's get people involved. Right, before we move on to the first proper section of the pod, Eric, trivia question. What have you got this week?
Well, because it is, of course, the end of the regular season, but I'll just kickstart with is, did you know that the Los Angeles Dodgers have scored the most runs and given up the fewest runs
in the regular season?
Allowed the in both the AL and NL.
Okay.
Right.
So in MLB, you mean?
In Major League Baseball. But obviously in this day...
Just an easier way to say it, buddy. A little
in
bit
this
more
day
efficient.
Of... it's almost redundant in this day of stupid interleague and everything, right? See, I didn't swear this time.
No, it's not.
No, to still be leading in both the AL and NL and in some categories, right? It meant more pre-interleague than it does nowadays, right? So,
meh.
Okay. We're 4 minutes into this section. We still haven't got the question.
The LA Dodgers this season, is the question too, is the LA Dodgers in both the AL and the NL, that they had the most runs scored and fewest runs allowed. So my question to you is, which was the last team to do that?
Okay. Are we getting options?
You are indeed.
Go on then.
Are they the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays?
Ooh.
Are they the 1993 Toronto Blue Jays? Wow, are we going back that far? Or are they the 2001 Seattle Mariners? Answer later on in the show. Moving on.
Okay, well, it's time for the leadoff batter. We're going to flip things around, guys and girls, for regular listeners of the podcast. We're going to focus this postseason episode, and we're going to kick things off with the postseason rather than a roundup of the news. And let's just get into how crazy and wild the wildcard matchups have been thus far. Now, we're going to start in the AL, Tampa Bay at Cleveland. Of course, Cleveland having won the Central Division, but ranked third, have to take on the lowest ranked wildcard team, which was the Tampa Bay Rays. So Cleveland get to home all three games of a potential three-game series. Game one was unbelievably quick, 2 hours, 17 minutes. I mean, that is extraordinary. Game two, the exact opposite, went for 15 innings. And of course, waiting in the wings was the New York Yankees, who won the AL East quite comfortably in the end. Now, JC, two questions. One, Rays, such a well-run ball club, always do well and always competitive, always seem to make the postseason, yet never seem to be able to progress. Again, it's happened. They haven't even got beyond the wildcard stage. And two, the Cleveland Guardians, apologies all around, old habits do die hard. The Guardians, I think they've come in under the radar, and I think they're a real threat in the American League, and they've just swept the Rays. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they have been the surprise team. I mean, they even surprised their front office. If you remember back in spring training, they were considering trading Jose Ramirez before extending him.
Yeah.
So it was clearly that they thought they may be in reboot mode as well. But what they proved, and what's really fun about that team, that a team that can really be very much geared to the fundamentals. So what I'm saying by that is great defensive team, guys like Steve Kwan, Miles Straw in the outfield, really solid defensive team, a team that's a high contact team, not tremendous amount of power, but lowest amount of strikeouts, and a team that can just pitch, can win without the bombs, without the launch angles. And so I think they're a really fun and compelling team for a purist. But the thing is they came up against a team that was very similar. I mean, the Rays are built in a very similar way to that, to the good defense, to the good pitching. And that's why we saw the scores we did, right? A 2-1 game and then a 1-0 game in 15 innings. I sort of feel like either of these teams would have been dangerous whoever they played next. And it's just that in these two incredibly tight games, the Guardians came out on top.
And do you agree with my synopsis that the Guardians are a real threat in this postseason? Because they seem to be hitting form big time.
Yeah, I mean, I like them as a team. Again, strong defense, good pitching, high contact rate. I think in the postseason where you play really tight games and you're not trying to hit the three-run home runs every time to win it, that that's a kind of team that could be competitive. I think the most interesting thing that came out of the series, that 15-inning game, right, they played by different rules in the extra inning part of the game.
Yeah.
So during the regular season, you have the ghost runner, you're trying to shorten things. Major League Baseball determined that for the postseason, they would play by the old rules, which is you got to really bring around a runner to score. And, you know, it's strange. I saw a lot of traffic on Twitter of people saying, like, maybe we should just have the ghost runner because that's the way you play the whole season. And it's weird to kind of change a fundamental rule for the postseason that you really
agree
one way or another. I believe in continuity. I think you want to play the same game in the postseason that you play in the regular season, whether that is the ghost runner or just having it where you got to bring, you know, you start as you would start a normal inning. It should be one or the other throughout the whole season.
And just very quickly before we move on from this particular matchup, I have to mention Jose Ramirez, who age 30, I think he's had an extraordinary season. I think he's been the absolute spark in this side. 601 at-bats, so healthy despite his age, 90 runs, 29 home runs, 126 RBIs, 20 stolen bases with 30-year-old's legs, an average of 280 and on-base percentage of 355. What a great player that man is.
Yeah, I mean, 30 is not old. I think most people think your 30 to 32 season, that's usually the height of a baseball career. And we've seen some, obviously, differences during the steroid era. You had players in 35 and beyond still being great. But I think he's right now in his prime, to be honest. And I think it was a really savvy move, ultimately, by the Guardians to choose to extend him rather than dishing him. I mean, he could have been playing for the Blue Jays this year very easily. What a different postseason we'd have if that were the case.
Yeah. And don't think, Johnny, you're saying, you talk old, because I know that's your specialty. They're actually out of the teams remaining in the postseason, they're the ones with the youngest team. They're the youngest players.
Interesting. There you go. Good stat. Okay, well, let's move on to the other American League wildcard matchup. The Blue Jays of Toronto hosting the Mariners of Seattle. And that's purely down to seeding, that obviously the Jays had a better record than the Mariners did in the regular season. Game one, the Mariners won it 4-0. A really impressive performance by Luis Castillo. What a great pickup he was. That was very much against the odds. And then in game two, guys, I mean, just explain to me. I was looking at the box score, and after five innings, 8-1, the Blue Jays lead. I mean, you never would back a team that's down 8-1 after five innings, and yet Seattle won it in nine innings, 10-9. For a Blue Jays fan, I mean, boys, that is just horrific.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to love this Mariners team, right? They had the longest drought in Major League history going to the postseason.
Yeah.
Here they are coming in with so many great young players. I had made a statement a few shows ago just about rookies and how they're not quite as exciting as they were in the past. Julio Rodriguez is fantastic, right? I mean, he's just a fun player to watch. He didn't do much in that 10-9 win, but overall, Cal Raleigh has been fantastic. There's a lot of young excitement with that Mariners team. Now, they're like a half generation below when you look at the Blue Jays team, and that's what's so disappointing for the Blue Jays, where you got, you know, Vladdy and you got Bo Bichette and you have that whole Kirk, that whole young sort of nucleus. But if I'm a Blue Jays fan, at least I sort of feel like this is a team built to compete for a number of years to come. So as disappointing as this is, I sort of would feel with that club, okay, we're going to have another chance. And if you're a Mariners fan, you feel like, okay, we're at the real cusp of some real competitive years. Problem with the Mariners, I guess it's problem with also with the Blue Jays, right? These two divisions are just so tough. It's so rough and tumble. You got the Yankees who are always going to spend money. The Red Sox who are going to reboot in the East. And in the West, I mean, Houston's just a juggernaut. So you got to get your moments. And that's why you got to be excited as a Mariners fan is, if you start building the momentum with wins like that 10-9 game, you really can ride that all.
Yeah, 100%. I desperately want to check out what the odds are, actually, because obviously these teams are all perceived to be outsiders. But I think both Cleveland and Seattle could easily progress. Just one quick thought. And Anthony Bass who was absolutely stellar through the regular season for Toronto. 1.54 ERA through 73 games with a 1.01 whip. He was the one that started the malaise in the eighth inning, giving up three runs. I mean, you talk about being wild. It doesn't get much more wild than that. So congratulations to Seattle. Commiserations to Toronto. And interestingly, talking of Toronto, our friend Colin Murray, you remember Colin, he used to present the NFL on Channel 5 back in the days, was actually at the game. We actually caught a sight of him on the TV in Toronto, and he sent us this message.
Hi guys, how you doing? It's Colin Murray here from the heart of Toronto, the day after the night before. Crazy times. Never been to a game like that in my life. Obviously brutal to be a Jays fan on the other side of that. I think it's the second biggest comeback in postseason history, joint second. There's loads of autopsies going on today. Should Gausman have stayed in for at least one more out? The collision, I think the collision summed up maybe the collective temperament, I think, and maybe the panic over both games, but a step further than last year with a young team. I have to say, while it obviously it was horrendous to watch it live with your eyes peeling, it was also amazing to watch baseball again, which I didn't get to do during COVID. And as you guys know, since I was 18, I've been coming to see the Jays play. So it was brilliant. It was fantastic atmosphere and then desolation. But the Mariners fans at the end, like how much it meant to them. We know what that's like with Edwin's walk-off. When you wait a couple of decades and then you get a moment, it's hard to begrudge them. And yeah, obviously it's a very different atmosphere in baseball. Even though you desperately want to win, you leave it at the ballpark. So, you know, plus points. I get to get a ferry over to the island for a couple hours this morning before my flight. Have a good day. And yeah, maybe we talk more next week.
Okay, and that was Colin Murray, former Channel 5 NFL presenter, and now presenting Countdown in the interim before Les Dennis takes over, basically doing my job. I mean, he's a lovely bloke, and I'm not bitter, but I am.
Simmer down.
No, let's discuss that.
Thank
you. Gosh.
That's a waffle. Johnny's waffling. Here comes a waffle. Now, I did speak to Colin. He was gutted, as you can tell in that message he sent us. And he had to, you know, he had tickets for Game 3, which is obviously not existing right now. But Colin is a true Toronto Blue Jay fan. He used to live in Toronto when he was a young kid, and he used to go to the Blue Jays games ad nauseum, sit in the bleachers. I mean, anybody who's sort of like puts his life on pause just to go over the wild card games, credit to him. And hopefully he's eating a lot of Timbits right now on his way back from Pearson Airport.
Here's the thing, Eric, true fans, and this is zero consolation to Colin, so I'm sorry I'm even saying this on his behalf, but true fans need these moments, these troughs, in order to make the highs that much higher, right? As a Red Sox fan, going through Bucky Dent hitting a home run over the Green Monster and losing, you know, with Buckner in 86, like all those moments build you up for the time when you actually do break through. Like you need that pain in order to build up the happy moments.
Colin did say to me that it's a shape of things to come. Last year that they blew it in the last day of the regular season. This year they blew in the wild card. Then he's going to say next year they're going to blow it next round. Then the ALDS and then World Series in 2025. Well, that's Colin Murray's prediction.
But and let's that happens. And that was the Red Sox, right? Before they broke the curse of the Bambino, right?
Yeah.
The home run in the, you know, in the championship series to break their hearts in the season before. So, you know, I do think that there can be trajectory in that way.
I think you make a very astute point. I felt the same when I was watching the mighty Blues Chelsea Football Club winning the 2004 Premier League title, 2005. That disappointment of those victories just set me up for the 2012 Champions League win, the multiple FA Cup win.
You are the king of the front runners. It's like you can't internalized pain, so hey, you just seek out things. You to, guys, like comfort blankets.
Can you say that? I support Bath Rugby, the worst team in the Gallagher Premiership, and I support Washington NFL, the worst team in the NFL.
Okay, moving on.
I'm a true fan. Moving on. National League. National League. Now I feel slightly more comfortable in the National League, despite the fact that pitchers no longer hit. That's another story. We're going to start off with the St. Louis Cardinals, the champion of the NL Central, taking on the wild card Phillies from my division, the National League East. Game one, Phillies 6-3 over St. Louis, and game two, and this despite, of course, playing in St. Louis, everybody, and game two, they shut them out. Aaron Nola with a shutout, 2-0. The Phillies sweep the Cards in St. Louis. It doesn't surprise me, if I'm honest, guys. I don't really rate this St. Louis side outside of their two MVP candidates, as in Arenado and old Goldschmidt. But I think the Phillies have just hit form when it matters, and they seem to have a bit of verve about them. They're slightly fearful of the Phillies right now. What's your thoughts, JC?
Well, first, we should add a little more texture to those two scores, particularly the first game where the Phillies scored 6 runs in the top of the ninth to win that game. I mean, they were getting crushed. That was really incredible. You know, came down to that final inning and they just pieced it together. Hit by pitch, C&I hit, Arenado, one of the best defensive players in the game, misplaying a ball. It was just sort of one of those destiny games where things would happen. But I do agree with you, Goldie. I mean, I think I saw someone make the point, like, if you get Harper and Castellanos, who's been a real disappointment this season, getting hot at the right time, I mean, all of a sudden you have an offensive juggernaut. And then you got a guy like Nola, who I believe led the league in strikeouts. I mean, Nola can just be absolutely dominant pitcher. You know, the bullpen's always going to be the question with the Phillies, right? That's been the case for so long. So I'm not sure. I'm not convinced yet that they can get by the Braves, get much farther. But I think that, you know, they're certainly a better team. But the Cardinals, you can't say that about the Cardinals, right? The Cardinals are perennially undervalued. Like, they always have these players that you've never heard of, you know, the David Ecksteins of the world, who all of a sudden just come out and just ball. You know, that's just the way they play. But I think the real takeaway, right, from this is the end of Pujols, the end of Yadi Molina, the end of Wainwright. I mean, this is really the end of an era for the Cards. And just sort of consistently, you know, whether you like them or not, they're not an exciting club, but just like the Rays, consistently good, well-run organization.
Thank you for that, JC. Well, we'll move on to the fourth and final of the wildcard matchups. And this one is as of recording. We are recording early Sunday evening, guys. So obviously this one hasn't been completed. It's the Padres playing against the Mets in New York. The Mets, of course, with a better regular season record. So the Mets have got home field advantage. Game one was anything but going the way of the home side. And I was amazed by this when you consider they had Max Scherzer on the mound for the Mets. They got themselves absolutely spanked by the Padres, 7-1. So obviously they faced elimination last night on Saturday night. And this one was tight up until the seventh. The Mets eventually running out 7-3 winners. And that was, of course, on the back of their ace, Jacob deGrom, who's had his struggles of late. And I don't know if that's maybe still lingering injury issues, boys, but his last three outings in the regular season weren't the best, and he had his problems last night in that game. But at the end of the day, they won. They have a chance to win it tonight, just obviously as the Padres do as well. Your thoughts about them, either of them, as an opponent in the next round, because they're up against the ultimate team, the LA Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm the Dodgers, I'm rooting for the Padres. I believe the Dodgers' record against the Padres this year they were 14-5.
Right.
Some crazy number. I mean, there are times when just other teams have your card and they just own you. And I think that the Mets and the Dodgers have played a little more evenly. You have a little bit more of that seasoned talent with the Mets that, you know, can maybe rise to the occasion. So I think if you're the Dodgers, the Padres would probably be, you know, the devil you know best.
And just talking about the Padres, this is a point that I read somewhere online that last season they were so focused on beating the Dodgers and winning the division title that in a sense they became so insular that it impacted on their performance elsewhere. And of course, they suffered accordingly. This season, it doesn't seem that they're so bothered. They've just been focusing on getting into the postseason, and they've achieved it. They're one game away of getting into the divisional series up against the Dodgers. I know you said the regular season, but at the end of the day, JC, once you hit the postseason, none of that matters anymore. It's a five-game series, and the Padres can do some damage. They've got the men on the mound that can do some damage.
Yeah, I mean, it is a different environment. But again, I think that if, you know, they always talk about like, oh, do you know you guys have this whatever, something on your back from, you know, never winning a World Series or never winning a playoffs. And most players will say, well, I didn't play then. But this is different, right? These guys have been face-to-face all season. Credit to the Padres, right? Because here's a team that had the whole Tatis distraction. They brought in Soto, who hasn't been as good as they sort of had hoped. And yet they found a way to grind their way through. So, you know, you may be right, but my money would be certainly on the Dodgers if the Pods get through. And I think the Mets, better shot at it.
Okay, I'm going to make a prediction right now that if the Padres do progress and they do beat the Mets, I'm predicting that they beat the Dodgers in the divisional series. There you go. Heard it first here. That's the jinx on the Padres, and apologies to all fans.
I guess we should mention that we our mutual friend David Langell, who's not with us again today because of work and family matters, he obviously has squeaky bum time for him. And we kind of had a chat with him earlier, and what was he saying again? Like, if they don't win it this year, it's pretty much, you know, it's still a rebuilding phase, isn't it?
See, I disagree with that because you have ownership now that's going to reboot immediately. See, it's rebuilding in the way the Yankees have historically, rebuilt, which is very quickly and very expensively.
I think in fairness to Dave, his point was that this team has to win now, because this team will not be winning in 2-3 years time, that, you know, such is the average age. But I agree with you, JC, when you've got a guy with a, you know, with deep pockets like their new owner has, then yeah, he'll just reboot, you know, next season, the season beyond, and bring in some superstars. But very interesting that, you know, that's the Mets. Let's face it, they dominated the league to such a degree. There was that commentator back in May saying the NL East is done. The Mets have won. Give them the pennant. Pay off the bookies, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that was how confident even pundits were that the Mets were going to win the division. And yes, somehow those crazy Mets managed to lose it. And I think another point that Dave made was a big part of that was not just being swept by Atlanta in Atlanta. Any team can happen. I don't think that's the issue. But they lost a series to Washington. Now, he's right. You don't lose a series to the Nats. Look at their season record. That's a nonsense. That's not a winning side. Anyway, hit that bell because I'm waffling.
Here's an off-piste trivia question for you. How many days did the Atlanta Braves spend in first place this season?
One or two.
We overtook them. Yeah. We overtook them for one day. Well, one day, about a week, maybe 2 weeks before.
The answer is it was a grand total of 8 days. So that's the thing. You win your division, you're in a better driver's seat. There you go. Hey. Moving on. Good luck, David Langell.
Yes, good luck. Good luck. And to Padre fans. Right.
Before we go, can I ask one last thing, not related to the series, but generally, because we're closing the door on where we are in the postseason.
Yeah.
Do we like the wild card series? Do we like the expanded playoff? Because personally, I think these series were great. I think the three-game series are fun. I think expanding it makes it more exciting. I think you could expand Major League Baseball and just have more teams, but have this as the playoff series.
It's a best of three is so cruel. It's so cruel, but is it too cruel? That's my question to you.
Well, it's hang on. You say it's so cruel, but it's not as cruel as a best of one,
right?
Which is what a former wild card matchup.
Yep,
so
very true.
Okay, moving on. Let's hit that bell.
Again, Jesus.
Right, moving on, batter number two. And this is our traditional leadoff batter. This is, of course, the news roundup. So just to quickly, let's have a look at a few things from the regular season. Right, well, let's kick off in appropriate style. Bow down in honour and celebration for that young man, Aaron Judge, who has successfully set a new American League home run record. And before we get into it, I'm also going to say, is the single season home run genuine record holder in my view? Oh, 62 home runs, Aaron Judge, congratulations. There you go. I've said it. Now you can do all you like, and I'll come back and we'll respond.
Well, let's let David get the first word on this, right? We had David who spoke out about this, and let's have him sort of speak, and he could tee up the discussion and sort of be the first person to refute your silliness, Goldie.
All right, here we go. Here's David Lengo.
I don't care about Aaron Judge. I don't care what Aaron Judge eats for breakfast. I don't care what Aaron Judge eats for dinner. I don't care if he hits 70,000 home runs. I don't care about Aaron Judge. No, if he hit 70,000 home runs, that would be pretty good. But nobody cares about American League, National League records anymore. Bonds has the record, whether you like it or not. Personally, Bonds is, you know, the greatest hitter I've ever seen with my own eyes. Was he on drugs for it? Yeah. there's nothing I can do about it now. And that record is, you want to call it tarnished? You want to call it just different? It's not what it used to be. We used to follow these things at bat by at bat by at bat, you know, when with Sosa and with McGuire and with Bonds, but that's done. I mean, that is completely done. And don't care. Obviously, Aaron Judge is a very talented player. And he bet on himself big time. And I think he's going to cash in big time. But do I care? No, I don't care.
Okay. Well, in essence, what did he say? He's bored. He's not interested. He has no interest.
Look,
okay, I don't care. I think it's his exact words.
Let's get into the nitty gritty of this. I mean, I think it's fun. Anything that helps bring attention to baseball and get people excited, I'm going to get behind. But he is not the all-time home run champ. It's just that simple. That you could go through, every era has its distractions, its factors that lead to success. When Roger Maris hit 61, it was during the expansion era. There was a diluted amount of talent. You could argue that that had an impact. When Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs, African-Americans were not allowed to play in the league. You did not have the best players. Obviously, Barry Bonds was the era of steroids. You have that issue there. Barry Bonds, I agree with David, best player who ever played in the game. I mean, you look at the statistics and compare him to other people who were also playing in that era. It's unbelievable. And you can parse Aaron Judge's home run record as well, too, which is when Maris hit his 61 home runs, part of the issue was that there was a 162-game season compared to the 154 games that Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs in, and that Maris didn't get to 61 until after his 154th game. The same argument could be made for Judge. He got to his 61st home run to surpass Ruth in game 155. So in effect, in the same amount of time that Ruth hit his 60 home runs, Judge hit 60 home runs as well too. So the bottom line is, like, you want to make excuses. You want to have reasons. The bottom line is the numbers are the numbers. Barry Bonds is the all-time home run champ. Great for Judge. Great season. Tip your hat. But that's it.
Utter tosh. Two reasons. One, you just referenced the different situations for Maris. You just referenced for Babe Ruth. No, the elite players from the Negro Leagues weren't involved. And with Maris, a different number of games. And it was a weak time during Major League Baseball. None of that's their fault. None of that's the result of illegal activity. None of that is the result of cheating. The equivalent of what Bonds did, and if you look at his numbers throughout, yes, I agree with you, the greatest player of the modern era, let me state that, a knob of the highest order, an arrogant knob, but the greatest player, no question. I'm not arguing that. But a man who destroyed his legacy by deciding to cheat in the latter stages of his career. Look at his numbers throughout his career. Does he get anywhere near 61? No, he doesn't. And yet suddenly he's hitting 73 at the end. Would we be saying Usain Bolt, who's just run a new world record 100 meters, the first 80 he ran and the last 20 when he's getting knackered, he got on a scooter and broke the world record. We go, yes, you are the world record holder. No, we wouldn't, because he's cheated. He's done something to take advantage. The other players didn't do anything illegal. They just simply played within their era, within the rules that existed. That's not their fault. And that's why the comparisons of this one's better than that is erroneous. And you're right. But in terms of a record holder, there is no question. Their records are the ones that should stand. And the records of Bonds, particularly single season, but even more particularly, and this is the one that really gets my goat, career home run record is still Hank Aaron. I don't care what anybody says. It will never be Barry Bonds, and it should never be Barry Bonds.
Okay, Goldie, you talk about in the era. So if we're talking about in the era, there was testing, there were rules. Bonds, you've slandered him, first off, because he was never charged with anything. There was never proven that he took roids. Now, you may believe he did, but the era had rules. Within the context of the rules, whether you want to buy it or not, he was allowed to continue to play. He was never sat down. He was never sanctioned for any of his activities. He played by the same rules of his era, and he performed as he performed. I'm not a fan of Bonds, look, but I'm just saying, in the context of his era, in the context of the rules of his era, in the context of whatever sanctions there were for that era, he performed as every other player who played in that time period did, and he had the success he had, and it is what it is.
I should add, in light of what you just said, JC, I should add that I do not see this as only Bonds at fault, or only Maguire, or only Sosa, or any other players that got caught up in it. I do feel that Major League Baseball has a huge amount to answer for. I do understand, and obviously I'm relatively new to the game. My interest in the game was obviously really started in 1997. So I don't really have any authority to announce an opinion here in a public forum. But as a fan and a real lover of the game, for my money, I understand why they turned a blind eye, because I remember the excitement of 1998. You know, you will remember, even though you weren't involved in the show at the time, you know, how they were cutting to Sosa's at-bats and cutting to Big Mac's at-bat, and they seemed like really nice guys, and everybody embraced that. The viewing figures were going through the roof, and this is all off the back of the strike. I understand why it happened, but ultimately what MLD did was sell their birthright by turning a blind eye to something that is not just illegal and not just distorts the numbers horrifically, but also is actually, it's really dangerous. You know, you only have to look at what's happened to elite athletes, particularly in WWE, who were addicted to steroids, and how unhealthy that lifestyle was. So I agree with you. It's not just about them, but for me, it is still cheating. Now,
just because I know you'll go on for quite a while if I don't stop you here, which is that you're betraying your historical limitations and knowledge, right? Go back to the 1970s. Different type of performance enhancing drugs, equally as dangerous. Cocaine was rampant in clubhouses. Certainly helped players in terms of their performance. Go back. You have
really?
Oh my God. Yeah, there was a famous court case. Google Pittsburgh Pirates cocaine case. You'll learn all about it in the history. Keith Hernandez, Dave Parker, many of the greats of the era.
But how does that enhance their performance?
Levels, focus, things of that nature. Okay. Amphetamines before that, greenies.
But none of them broke a record, therefore it's not part of the conversation.
Well, supposedly Willie Mays was one of the players who used quite a few amphetamines, certainly affected potentially his career. But a lot of the best players of those eras, I mean, now you're sort of starting to split hairs if you're saying, well, you know, they had more success, but they didn't quite have the success of Bonds. So then it's not the same thing. That's silly. Either you're going to make the argument that using performance enhancing drugs eradicates all your performance, or you make the argument that it's a part of the game. It's bad. It's really awful. But it was the way it was during those periods.
But this discussion is about a record. It's specific about someone who holds a record. And my argument is, for me, for my personal opinion, and yes, I have no proof. This is just purely the basis of my opinion. And obviously the allegations that have been made and are well documented. And I know there's no proof. So it is just purely my opinion as a baseball fan, is that I will never recognize those two records for that reason. Because in my mind, Hank Aaron is the true career home run record holder. So, and now Aaron Judge is the single season.
In conclusion, congratulations to Aaron Judge for hitting 62. But the next question is MVP of the year, Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani?
Good question. Good question.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have a strong opinion on this. So, I don't think there's a wrong answer per se. But we've discussed this for many, many years about what the MVP represents. Does it represent the best player in the game, or does it represent the player who is most valuable to his team to help elevate them? And it's on rare occasions that players from bad teams will end up being MVP. To me, as great as Judge is, and you and I can have this argument about whether he's the home run champ, he's doing something within the realm of performance that has occurred in Major League Baseball. Shohei Ohtani is doing something that has never been matched, certainly since 1900. I mean, there's some arguments about players in the 19th century who were sort of two-way players in the same way. Obviously, we can talk about Ruth and what he did, but it wasn't done in the same fashion. Shohei Ohtani being a top three pitcher in the league, being one of the top hitters in the league, to me, is your MVP. The season is so remarkable. And I realize that people are going to say, well, Aaron Judge has a higher WAR. I honestly think WAR does not do a good enough job of being able to calculate the uniqueness of Shohei Ohtani. So to me, he's the MVP.
Shohei Ohtani, more home runs than Giancarlo Stanton, higher batting average than Mookie Betts, lower ERA than Gerrit Cole, and more strikeouts than Justin Verlander. But I as much as that pains me, I give to Aaron Judge. Carried the entire team on his back.
Well, that's the argument, right? Which is that the MVP is an award for the most valuable player to their team and to performance. But, and I think that's the tiebreaker to me. I think if players are right on exactly the same, then you give it to the better player. But to me, Ohtani is a singular player in baseball right now.
It pains me to say it, but I know. I'd rather give it to Ohtani, but he can't deny Judge.
I think Judge is going to get it, by the way.
Well, that's an interesting. Who is actually going to get it? Yeah. I have to say, I am with Eric. I think, as much as I think Shohei is amazing, I think the tiebreakers, they both had amazing seasons, and maybe Shohei's was slightly more amazing, but in terms of the impact on his team, Judge was enormous, particularly during that second half when they really started to tank. He literally, physically, single-handedly carried the Yankees through to the postseason as division title winners.
Can I flip that argument around, which is Ohtani's performance is even more amazing considering how bad the Angels were.
Yeah.
You had Trout out for most of the season, so he didn't have that offensive protection. He won 15 games on a really subpar team. I mean, that really, to me, even amplifies his performance.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very valid argument. I'm happy to lose this argument, JC. Unlike the previous one.
And as far as the Aaron Judge thing, remember, I think I cursed it by saying the curse of Joey Gallo, whatever happened to that. Moving on.
Yeah. Okay, well, from one amazing home run hitter to another, Albert Pujols joins the 700 club, 703 to be exact. Who would have seen that coming? Obviously, returning from the really useless Angels to the much more effective Cards and low to protection as well. And of course, he's now retired. We won't see any more of Albert. And we've got another bit of input from Big Dave. We asked him what his thoughts were on Albert Pujols joining the 700 club.
Albert Pujols, 700 club. Do I care? I care a little bit. More so than Aaron Judge, probably. You know what's interesting about Albert Pujols is that obviously he had a tremendous career as a Cardinal, and after he signed that big contract with the Angels, I think we can all agree that it was a huge disappointment. But what came next was that final chapter, which kind of, you know, turned that downtrending story on its head, and he became kind of a feel-good story. Went to the Dodgers last year at the end of the year, played very well. Had a lot of support in LA with Dodgers fans. And then he goes back to St. Louis and he has this year that he pulls out of his ass where he just starts hitting home runs left and right at the very end of his career, which Craig Calcitretta, or however he pronounces his name, said is a very Cardinal thing to do. And that's true. It is a very Cardinal thing to do when your career is completely out of gas, you go over to St. Louis and somehow you figure out how to make your last 2 or 3 months special. And that's what Albert Pujols did. So, you know, extremely boring, uninteresting player for a man of his accomplishments. You know, I know absolutely nothing about Albert Pujols' personal life. This is a guy who's hit 700 home runs. Wouldn't you think that I would know something about Albert Pujols besides that he's a baseball player after hitting 700 home runs? You would think. But he happens to be, you know, extremely boring and like watching paint dry. But look, I love a ball player and congratulations to him.
Well, there you go, guys. And interesting to say, he doesn't care as he did in his previous comments. He said he cares a little, but he then goes on to say that Albert Pujols, when you consider what an amazing player who's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, is unbelievably boring and he's got, you know, absolutely no interest because he's so boring, which I think's a little harsh, isn't it?
I think it's 100% harsh. He's no less boring or more boring than Derek Jeter was. He just happened to play for the Cardinals and then get relegated because he took the big contract to the Angels. you know, I think there are two interesting things about Pujols. And I got to say, for me, his run to 700 was even more compelling than Judge's run to 62, because I think he was turning back the clock in a way that was just so wonderfully nostalgic for baseball, that here was a guy who, you know, he played against, you know, fathers and sons, and they had all these great statistics about, like, you know, 7 degrees of Pujols spanning back to like the 1800s, and to see him turn back the clock. And I mentioned this in a previous show, it all came down to that home run derby. I honestly felt like when he went on that tear in the home run derby, it like sparked something back in him. So I really certainly enjoyed that piece of it. But there are two types of players who end up going to the Hall of Fame. They're players who are just these short periods of bursts of success, and the ones that just are able to kind of keep it going a long time. If you look at his career, right, his start of his career was could have been one of the greatest of absolutely all time. Like, I mean, talking like top two or three players. He got to the Angels and he just sort of kind of glided for a lot of, you know, half his career, where he was good. Don't get me wrong, he was goodish hitter, but first baseman DH. So, and he really got all those accumulation stats on the back of a half a career that was a little meh. So it's going to be interesting to parse where he fits in history. His overall WAR is amazing. 700 home runs puts him in an elite club. You know, he hit just under 300. But is he really, should he be talked about in that category of the players who are also in the 700 home run club? I say great career, first ballot Hall of Famer, not a top five player of all time.
Interesting. I want to pick up on Dave's comment that he was boring, and therefore that's why he's not that bothered. Did you know that Albert is a supporter of people with Down syndrome? Why? Because when he married his now, sadly, ex-wife, Isabella, she had a daughter from a previous relationship who had Down syndrome. So he got really involved, a condition that Isabella was born with. So all credit to Albert. And this is the most interesting piece of trivia information about Albert Pujols. He became a US citizen in 2007. What was his citizen test score, guys?
Perfect score.
Perfect score. Well done, JC. 100%. There you go.
Goldie, can I ask you, does it bother you that he played in the steroid era as well, too? That a large portion of the early part of his career? There were some allegations. Jack Clark had said something on the radio, former St. Louis Cardinal. He then rescinded that because Pujols vehemently denied it. But, you know, certainly he played in that period, too. Okay. And he did have physical change in his career. So, you know, in a sense, he's as culpable as Bonds is for, if you're thinking about like, oh, physically he changed so much.
Do you
even
think
though there's no proof? There's no proof.
No. And when you say
then it's just, you know, with Bonds. And okay, with but then all these guys, it's all conjecture,
buddy,
except for guys like A-Rod, where it was absolutely proof.
Yeah, but yes, I know there's an element of conjecture, but let me ask you this. When he hit the last few years of his career, he got injured a lot and his numbers went down, which is normal. That's what happens when you get old. With Barry Bonds, he started hitting home runs like he'd never done before, and he wasn't getting injured. Now, me is why I accept the allegations as probably, in my opinion, to be true, and therefore why I have such strong opinions on it.
Conceivably, a player could have used steroids for a portion of his career and then realized the error of their ways and gotten off of it. And you see when he goes to the Angels after he got his big contract, his performance did change. I am not saying one bit that Albert Pujols necessarily did it. I have no idea whatsoever, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but what I'm saying is that there are a lot of ways to make this argument about that era, about players, to point fingers. And unless you know, unless you're Manny Ramirez, unless you're A-Rod, you know, unless you're players that have absolutely been bonged, it may not be right or fair with any of them to cast aspersions.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, we're going to miss Albert Pujols because we've interviewed him in 3 consecutive All-Star games. He had a very expensive
him at the World Series.
He had been in the World Series. He had a very expensive watch at the press conference that Johnny commented on. And goodbye, Albert Pujols. Thank you for a stellar career.
And Yadi, right?
And Yadi and Adam.
Yeah. Yadi. I'm a big fan.
Yadi's going to be interesting to be whether he's a Hall of Famer, right?
Moving on.
Okay. I don't think that's a lawful.
It wasn't about baseball. No, I know, but this is. Who's dragging on?
What? You can't, even if it is, you can't say we're that. You're not
even
people.
At the halfway point. Hurry up.
Okay. All right, moving on. Jeff McNeil wins NL batting title. Who on earth would have predicted that? Not me. I picked him up in previous seasons of my fantasy team, and yeah, he always gave me a great average, and that was it. Anyway, he is a Met, so therefore we need to cast you over to our resident but absent Met fan, that is David Lengel. This is what he had to say.
Jeff McNeil wins the batting title, and who would have predicted that? Except tons and tons of Mets fans, of course, who have been watching Jeff McNeil hit since he came up. Funnily enough, remember Mickey Callaway, the guy who sent dick pics to female reporters? He was actually the manager of the Mets, if you can remember that. He had an incredibly well-manicured beard. He said that defense would probably keep Jeff McNeil from reaching the major leagues. Well, as Howie Rose said the other day, who's the broadcast voice of the Mets radio, wrong, completely wrong. And now Jeff McNeil is actually, in addition to winning the second batting title in Mets history, is in the running for a gold glove. So, amazing player. What I really love about Jeff McNeil is his bat. He doesn't use a bat with a bat handle. This is like kind of a new thing. And he looks like he's holding an axe, and he's just like wielding this axe when he steps up to the plate. I really like that. And he is probably, this just goes to show you, the Mets are such a pitching-rich franchise, probably the best, or one of the best pure hitters in the history of the team, which is now 60 years old. He's like a Daniel Murphy who could play defense. But congratulations to him. He's a great player, and I'm looking forward to watching him in the playoffs.
Okay, so just to recap, according to Dave, the only people that are not surprised that he's won this batting title are Mets fans, who they did expect it. Second batting title in the Mets history since 61. Interesting. And also interesting point he made about his defense. I mean, did you see this season coming, JC?
Can I say something? I'm going to sort of put on my Dave hat and act as if I were Dave, which is, who cares? Who cares? That would be what Dave would say if he didn't care, right? And it's interesting because I love the bat. I mean, I was a contact hitter. So like to be average was an important statistic. But if you now look at analytics, the batting title is not what it once was in terms of value. No one cares about it. OPS is important. Extra base hits are very important. OPS plus is important. You look at the WAR for both Jeff McNeil and Luis Arraez, who won the batting title in the American League. I think that McNeil was like a 5.5. Arraez was like under 5. You know, having a batting title is not a reflection of anything other than contact ability, which again, for me, is really important. But I know that if you are a real keen follower of the analytics of baseball, it's probably one of the least valuable crowns that you can get at the end of the season now, which is kind of sad to me, but something worth pointing out.
I had a 5.7 WAR on the season, by the way.
Which WAR is it? Are you doing Fangraphs WAR, F WAR, or B WAR?
I'm doing Baseball Reference WAR.
Okay.
So, but I mean, you know, the traditional criticism still exists, because if you're playing fantasy baseball, Jeff McNeil, despite this amazing batting average, you know, he pumps in what, 9 home runs, 73 runs. I mean, you're not getting excited about that.
Let's just give context though with the 5.7 WAR. Aaron Judge, I believe, led Major League Baseball at like a 10.6 WAR. So you're like half as good.
Yeah.
You get this batting title, but you're only half as valuable as an Aaron Judge or numerous. I think he was 20. McNeil was like 20 in the 20s in terms of ranking for WAR, and Arraez was even lower. And and that takes into account defense and a lot of other factors. So the bottom line is batting title has been devalued. So, you know, I'm happy for him. Like that would have been my dream to get the batting title. Like to me, I was brought up in an era where like get a base hit. Like that's what you do. And that's not value anymore in baseball. It's interesting.
Or in your case, get hit by pitch.
if I got a 1-2 count, I was definitely sticking out my ass.
You're leaning in.
I was leaning in. Gotta get on, man.
You're the sort of guy they'd have in movies. You know, the guy who's taking in one too many to the head, who's round the back of the clubhouse dribbling. Anyway, no, let's move on. Now, this is going to be a great story for you, and I love this story, not just because he's a good guy, but it's just that feel-good factor. And you're going to love this, of course, JC, because we're talking a catcher. Not our future Hall of Famer by any stretch of the imagination, but Stephen Voigt from the Oakland Athletics hits at his final at-bat, having announced he was retiring at the end of the season. He's got his family in the stadium, and let's face it, Oakland absolutely stinks, and no one's there normally anyway, but he's got all his family there, he's got his kids there, and in his final at-bat, he hits a home run. And you've got to watch the footage, because his body language as he's going around the bases, I think, is sheer, unadulterated joy. Joy from him, and a joy to watch as a baseball fan.
Oh my God. It probably was the most enjoyable moment for me to watch in baseball all season. I've got to be honest, because anyone who's played sports, who's committed, and you get to that last moment, I've been there. Right. And
yeah,
it is so emotional when you get there, and to be able, my last at bat as a hitter was a base hit, and to have that moment, to be able to end on that, is so amazing. What I love about that story is that Voigt, before the game, was doing blocking drills. He's a catcher and working on blocking. Last game of his career, doesn't have to do blocking drills. He's out there doing blocking drills. Yeah. It was like he needed to go through it. There was a line someone said on Twitter, they quoted Moneyball, which is perfect also because of the A's. And how can you not be romantic about baseball? This story to me is the perfect example of what the beauty of the sport and having that one final shiny moment. I loved that story.
Hey, don't forget the icing on the cake was that the club, the Oakland A's, actually let his kids announce him on the PA system to go on bat, to go when he went up to bat. And that was a lovely touch.
Did he know that? Did he know that was going?
No, and you can see him welling up as he's going up to the batter's box.
Oh my God. So not only is he welling up, but he then goes and hits a home run. Like, oh, my God.
And I got to say, it wasn't a cookie either. It wasn't like a fastball down the middle of the plate. It was, you know, down in the zone. He went down and got it. It was a great moment.
And when his kids go, you know, the next up at bat, my dad.
Fantastic.
Our dad or whatever it is.
Brilliant. So any of our listeners that haven't seen this footage, seriously, go and dig it out. It's amazing. And watch him skip round the bases with just the enthusiasm and the joy of a 9-year-old kid who dreamt of being a major leaguer. And you were, sir. You were a major leaguer. Congratulations, Stephen. Okay, so we draw this section to a close. This is one story that is not got a happy feeling about it, and it is the MLBTV.com announcement that anybody that had the package for the season, paid for it beforehand, always used to involve and include live coverage of the postseason. And guess what? Suddenly out of the blue, it doesn't. UK Red Sox fans tweeted, sorry at MLB and MLB Europe, but I think this is a huge own goal at a time when you are trying to grow the fan base of the sport. Changing the blackout terms and conditions is shady at best, in my opinion, and will put a lot of people off renewing. And they put up the statement, and I'm 100% with them. I think it's appalling to make an announcement mid-contract. I mean, that surely legally is fraudulent, isn't it, JC?
Yeah, I mean, the phrase that came to my mind even before you read that tweet was own goal. I mean, this is just such an easy one not to screw up.
Yeah.
And there's been so much goodwill building in the right direction. And then you have this. It's insane. It's insane. The thing that Major League Baseball has struggled with a lot historically in Europe, just in general, is communication. You got to communicate well with your fans. You can never be above your fans. You need to feel like you're all rowing in the same direction and that the fans are a part of that conversation. And this is a perfect example of doing the exact opposite.
Eric, you're always hot on opinions on this sort of stuff. How angry were you when you saw this?
I mean, it is very cheeky of MLB to do this because they actually took out the fine print in their, you know, rules and regulations of applying to the MLB.TV package that they could, you know, alter the coverage at any time they want, which is not a good thing to do to fans. Now, if you were living in this country, yes, you could subscribe to BT Sport if you don't have a satellite dish or if you don't have a television set, let alone that, you know, it's like how it is a they dropped the ball, basically, Major League Baseball. And there's a few people I know and a few front offices that I'll be speaking to. But, like, what were you thinking?
Well, let us know what they say, because I think everybody wants to hear that story. Let's finish off on an even more depressing note, and that is our dear friend Akil Baddoo, the Baddoo Watch. Not exactly been a stellar year, Eric, which might suggest this may be the end of this section.
Well, let's face the facts. Akil, for those of you who are new to the show, Akil Baddoo, a Detroit Tigers outfielder. It was a feel-good story of the year last year. Grand Slam on his first at bat. Now he's, as Johnny will now read out the stats for his 2022 season, and he had better stats in the first 2 weeks of his career than he had in all of 2022.
Yeah, it doesn't make for good reading. 73 games, 9 RBIs, 30 runs, 2 home runs, 9 stolen base, batting average 204. So yeah, bit part. Right. Not exactly rushing to trade for him.
I'm going to give perhaps a bit of a limp defense for Akil Baddoo, but keep in mind that his defense was excellent this year. His total zone runs number, which is one of the metrics for defense, was excellent. He had an above war, above replacement. So yeah, I know he wasn't a star, but it was a 0.4. So, you know, he's better than the guy you brought up from the minors, even as bad as this year was. I don't want to give up with him. Though we should have done John Schreiber, who had a much better year. My guy, the relief pitcher for the Red Sox, 2.22 ERA, 2.5 WAR from a reliever who wasn't even a closer for most of the season. So we can revisit that later.
Yeah, so we'll see who our new view to Akil Baddoo, John Schreiber, will be next season. If there is a next season, question mark, to be discussed later.
Okay, batter number 3 is up, and appropriately we're rounding up with an absolutely brilliant good feeling story, and that is huge congratulations from the Johnny and Josh show to Team GB, because since our last podcast, Team GB has qualified for the first time in their history for the World Baseball Classics. JC, you must be not just thrilled, but unbelievably proud.
I can't even express, I think, the feelings I had when that happened. There was a really nice chain on social media amongst, I think it was on Facebook, amongst the former players. And I sort of mentioned that it's these players have played with incredible heart. They're amazing. But it's about the history of this program. All the people who invested time over the years to keep it going and to keep the momentum going forward. But that said, this team was fantastic if you watched the qualifier. I mean, they played with such grit, such bulldog determination. The game that they won to get into the event was amazing. I mean, it was an incredible comeback. They have some great players. Harry Ford is the number one prospect in the Mariners organization behind the plate. Fantastic player. Pitching depth was great. And the team's going to be even better when it gets to the main draw, where you're going to have guys like Jazz Chisholm. You're going to have a number of other major prospects. This is going to be a competitive team. But more than anything, you have to give credit to the coaching staff, because it's a lot like college football, right? It's about coaching, but it's also really about putting together a team and doing recruiting. And, you know, tip your hat to Drew Spencer, who's the gaffer on this team, is the head coach, the manager, did an amazing job with that. And then you get guys like Brad Marcellino, who's my teammate on GB national team for 10 years. I mean, I'm so old. Jesus, I'm so old. My second time playing for Great Britain, he was like a teenager. He was my roommate. Now he's the hitting coach at AAA for the Mariners, was the hitting coach on this team. Just fantastic with players. Guys like Jonathan Cramman, who I coached when he was a teenager and started with the London Mets, is on the coaching staff. It's just really fun to see that you have people who have real connections to Great Britain baseball on that coaching staff, even if you have a lot of players who may have a slightly more attenuated relationships.
You mentioned the fact that, and this is an enormous plus, that Jazz Chisholm qualifies to represent Team GB. Are you slightly concerned that might upset the team ethos? That, you know, the players that got them there, suddenly these big wigs are being, these big Major League Baseball superstars are being drafted in. Does that not concern you? Baseball's a team game. It's all about culture. It's all about chemistry.
No, I mean, and we've seen this with the World Baseball Classic in the past, that the qualifying team is going to be different from the main draw team, partially because there are limitations on Major League Baseball players playing in the qualifiers. So even if Jazz Chisholm, he was been injured, but even if he had wanted to play, he wouldn't have been eligible for it. And I think that the players who are on the team will understand that and appreciate that. This is just an opportunity, right, for Great Britain baseball. It's an opportunity to get attention to baseball in the country, to inspire people in Great Britain. Admittedly, there was only one player on this roster on the qualifying team who actually played domestically. So, you know, these are players from elsewhere, but they're representing with a lot of pride. And that's one of the more enjoyable pieces of it. They're singing God Save the King. They really care about what they're representing. And the hope is that it's going to lead to media attention. It has a financial impact. Great Britain gets the baseball program gets money for qualifying for the main draw. Each time they perform in that draw, they can make more money, and that can really help springboard baseball in the UK. So I'm just excited from a fan perspective, excited from a person who was involved in that program for many years. And I think the best team you could put out in the field for the main draw, you have at it.
For me as well, I was quite emotional when I saw them actually qualify. The qualifiers were in Regensburg, Germany, and they beat Spain as Josh said, in an epic game. And all I could do is think back to the past, 20, 25 years that we used to go down to Brighton and muddy fields in Croydon, CGB play, and one man and his dog would walk by some years, and then one year would be popular, and then they'd be on the up and up. And it was quite the roller coaster ride in the past 25 years to see where they are now. And congratulations to GB as well. I've known some of those guys who are amazing, some of the amazing coaches, Zach Grafner and I. We go around all of Europe for the MLB game development program. He's part of that coaching staff at GB. And we're just looking forward to see GB play against the likes of Mike Trout and Paul Goldschmidt et al.
Yeah. I mean, the takeaway opportunity, here's hoping that it helps springboard baseball domestically more so, that people see this, get some excited, realize that there is opportunity to play at the highest level. Great Britain's always sort of lagged behind in terms of development. Bulgaria's had a player who's been signed to a major league team contract, minor league contract through a major league team. Great Britain's still looking for their first born and bred player to end up with a team in Major League Baseball. We've had some independent players, certainly some good college players, but hopefully this is a moment for that.
Okay, time now for the seventh inning stretch. I'm doing, in case you don't know, and this is a time for Eric to focus on baseball culture, baseball book. We'll kick off with the book of the week. Eric, what have you got for us?
Well, you know what, I figured, you know, I'll do one of Josh's books.
No!
And it's
what?
3 years it's taken.
It's the History of Baseball 100 Jogs by Josh Lieventhal.
Oh,
and
chef's kiss on that one, Eric.
It's a great
chef's kiss. That was good.
No wonder you wouldn't tell us pre-recording what the book was.
Josh Lieventhal's written a great book about baseball. One of the few Joshes who do, and it's the history of baseball in 100 objects, pictorial as well. It's got stuff like the first fielder's glove and a picture, and explaining basically what are the most important objects in the history of baseball. For example, Schulze Jackson's shoes are in the book. Stuff that obviously you would find in Cooperstown or not find in Cooperstown as well. Ron Bloomberg's bat, because of course he was the first designated hitter. Now that means nothing in this day and age of interleague and stupid new rules. I digress. But yes, that's my baseball book of the week by Josh Lieventhal, A History of Baseball 100 Objects. But it doesn't end there, because there's another book. It's actually The 34-Ton Bat by Steve Ruchin, which is not too dissimilar to The History of Baseball in 100 Objects, but it's not as pictorial. But this one actually goes into detail of other objects that you'd never think about that are important in the history of baseball. For example, the Ebbets Field urinals with is mentioned there heavily, and that's not exactly something would collect and put in Cooperstown or in their front room as a baseball collectible. But did you know at Ebbets Field, one of the reasons why the Brooklyn Dodgers had to find a new stadium and leave Ebbets Field because it was so decrepit, their urinals were disgusting, and that was the beginning of the end of the Brooklyn Dodgers leaving Brooklyn, is the urinals. Who'd have thunk? Taking the piss.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah,
but there you go. Yeah, so there's the 34-ton bat. There's another added one to, and the other one, but of course by the ever amazing author Josh Livinthal. Moving on.
No response from anybody.
No, exactly. I guess yes, you don't want to talk about baseball books. Oh, there we go. And I wonder why. What do you want me to do next, Johnny? Do you want me to talk about more pop culture stuff?
Wrap it up, Eric.
Well, I mean, given the fact that you normally go from book to music, and this week we're talking urinals, I'm assuming we're going to get some pissy song again, are we?
Oh, it's a family show. I figure, so looking at the teams that were left over in the playoffs, I was trying to scan through some like vinyl collections that I still own, or even through the libraries of music that had baseball songs connected to it. And I said, what about the Phillies? Well, there's Baseball Fever, that from the 70s, which was terrible. There's a disco track. So I said, nah, I'm not going to do that one. And I said, well, and then I stumbled upon the Phillies fight song, and with fight being P-H-I-G-H-T. See what they did there. I don't know. It sounded like a bunch of drunken guys in a bar who just grabbed an acoustic guitar. And here's an excerpt of what the Phillies fight song sounds like.
Fight, fight, fighting through the season. Fight, fight, fighting through the fall. Fight, fight, fighting, there are fighting Phillies. Fight, fight, fight for it all. Phillies flying round the bases. Long ball headed for the wall. Fans are cheering cause it's out of here. And Harry's making the call. Let's hand the closer the ball. Fight, fight, fighting through the season. Fight, fight, fighting through the fall. Fight, fight, fighting, there are fighting Phillies. Fight, fight, fight for it all. Fight, fight, fighting, there are fighting Phillies. Fight, fight, fight for it all.
Okay, is it sheer coincidence, Eric, having listened to that, that fight rhymes with shite? Because that was the worst song you've ever played, and you've played some pretty awful.
I'll make an argument that with better production value and a different singer, that one could have been passable.
But
I'm telling you, it was just like poorly put. Yeah, better production.
Excuse me. Does the Eurovision Song Contest, did Terry Wogan go, it was not the best song, but I tell you what, the production value is excellent. Give them a good score.
No, he doesn't. You get a little production value there. Hey. You get a different singer. That one could be okay. It's got some good bones.
It's not. It's awful.
But is it so bad it's good, or is it just so bad it's terrible?
No.
Yeah.
It's just really bad.
I was on the fence with this one. I'm willing to not go ahead with playing this as the final song at the end of the show.
Okay.
But I discovered it, and I thought, well, it's been a while since Seattle were in the playoffs, 2001 to be exact. And me being a fan of the band called the President of the United States of America, we all remember that song, Peaches or Lump, moving to the country, going to eat a lot of peaches. Well, Chris Ballew, of lead singer of said President of the United States of America, who's a Seattle native, has written songs about many sports teams, including the Seattle Supersonics in the past. He came out with this little ditty. Here's a little excerpt of Chris Ballew, 2000.
Randy Jr., Alex gone. Lou was here to carry on. But who was gonna hit home runs? The Mariners, 2001. Who was this fellow? Ichiro. They say he's great, we didn't know. From the land of the rising sun, the Mariners, 2001. into the season of unknowns. Beat the A's first game at home, 1-0, and out in front. Mariners 2001, they won 11, dropping 4, hit a streak and won 9 more. 9 games up and they weren't done. The Mariners 2001. Were simply all on fire. The glove work, in a word, inspired. The pitching wouldn't be outdone. Mariners 2001, 50 wins on June 14th. Spectacular became routine. So there's 2 outs, they said, so what? The Mariners 2001, led by 20 in July. AL West was hung and dried. Was A-Rod having any fun? The Mariners 2001, 100 wins September 5. The record pace still alive. Fans went crazy in the sun. The Mariners 2001.
Okay, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I actually quite like that. I do actually quite like it. It sounds like a proper song.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bit of rock and roll.
That's not hard. Did you listen to the lyrics? Like, yeah, you know, it's like didn't know Ichiro. I mean, come on. Like, that's as
JC,
lazy as it gets.
It came out in 2001.
Excuse me.
What, like 2001? You couldn't do good lyrics?
Excuse me. Neil Diamond, one of the greatest songwriters of all time, wrote, "I am, I said, to no one there, and no one heard me, not even the chair." Now, if it's
that's
good enough for Neil,
this.
It's not. It's now. But we love him.
Come on.
I'm sorry, but that's certainly a lot better than the other one. But then anything was better than the other one.
Maybe I purposely picked that Phillies fight song to make sure
you're just manipulating Gouldie's small mind.
Hey, there you go. Exactly. I was going to override him anyway. And because the Seattle Mariners have progressed to the next round of the playoffs, I'm going to make sure that song progresses to the end of the show where Johnny can.
Good man, Eric.
Throw
good
to it in its entirety. There's your baseball books of the week and pop culture and music and moving on.
Do you know what worries me, JC? We get to the musical culture. He's now even doubling up the songs as if one wasn't already bad
books.
Enough.
And
the books. Absolutely.
Like I need more time.
We have such limited shows, you know, and there's only like maybe 1 or 2 shows left of our season. So, you know, I got to pack in all the info and the entertainment for you guys.
Okay. Trivia answer. Quick reminder of what the question was, please, Eric.
I forgot already. No. no. Yes, earlier in the show, I asked you that the Los Angeles Dodgers led both the AL and NL with most runs scored and fewest runs allowed. Which was the last team to do it? I asked you earlier, was it A, the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays? Was it B, the 1993 Toronto Blue Jays? Or was it C, the Seattle Mariners of 2001, funnily enough?
Okay, well, obviously, Josh will be a lot better informed, so I'll go first because I don't want to steal all his ideas. My knowledge is only goes back to 97, so I've not got a lot to offer about 93 other than the fact that I know it was the era of the big hitters in Toronto. So I don't remember anything about their pitching being lights out, so I'm going to ignore them. I'm going to focus on the era that I have been following baseball with some depth. The Mariners of 2001, I have a very strong memory of the number of runs they scored, but also I'm pretty sure their lineup was pretty good as well. Certainly their starting pitching. The Rays traditionally always produce a good starting pitching rotation, but in honor of the Mariners' first one in years in the postseason, and the fact that I do really fancy them to actually take the championship title in the American League. Yes, you heard it here first. I'm going to go with the Mariners of 2001.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mariners are the team. That's the year they're 116, right?
Yeah, massive number. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're just the best team. That 93 team won a World Series, and it was the Joe Carter home run year, but I definitely think it's the Mariners as well.
Excellent. I can't believe I might be right. What's the answer, Eric? Go on, put me out of my foot.
Well, I guess maybe you were listening to that crisp blue classic track a little too closely. That is correct. It was.
Yes! I've got one. But the trouble is, I've got one right, but so's Josh got it right. So there's no real bragging rights
here.
No,
it cancels each other out. Null point.
Hey, but I went first. I committed first. I mean,
you always go first, Gouldie. I don't know why, but you always choose to go first.
Oh, because if I go second,
it's like
and I follow you.
It's like you cutting the queue all the time.
It's nothing to do with cutting. Hey, you, Mr. Hollyman, it's nothing to do with cutting the queue. It's because if I go second, you'll say, oh, you're just stealing my ideas because I know what you like. Don't forget, you're the man who pushed me over in the dizzy bat race. Anyway, that's another story. Okay,
so
hit that bell.
Sad old man.
Right on two fronts. Okay. It's the Johnny and Josh show. This is the end of our show today. And it's been a long one, so we're so grateful for you for sticking with it. We do hope you've enjoyed it. But do pump us up, the Johnny and Josh show on Twitter, on Facebook, on all the social media, Instagram even. I mean, I'm on Instagram and I've made 7 posts so far. But do big up our social handles, guys. Facebook, yes, I should mention page, and I'm pointing at the bottom of the screen for you great YouTube viewers. And don't forget also, do check out the Nat Coombs Show on at the NC Show, part of the Ted Fred stable, of which we are proud to be a part as well. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, whatever is your social media genre of choice, do get involved. And do hit the like button. We'd be very, very grateful. So what have you got to look forward to this month, boys? We're definitely going to do at least one more show, at least. You got some more curling, JC, to look forward to?
Yeah, since our last show, I went on the road twice. We went to the U.S. Open of Curling, and we made the semifinals. And
wow,
the week before that, we played in the Gord Carroll Memorial in Whitby, Ontario, and also made the semifinals, beating the Canadian Junior National Team.
So you are the Tim Henman of U.S. curling, that you choke in the semis.
I think getting there has been quite an accomplishment for us. So it's a chase for points to try and make the U.S. Nationals. So both of those
Okay. have been. And how are you on the chase? How are you in the rankings?
We're in one of the spots at the moment. Okay. So we're just
how many spots are there?
Total 8 teams make the Nationals. 3 have already been set. It's the Olympic team, the team that went to the world, to the junior national team. 3 are on points. Right now, we're currently the 2nd team of those points. And then there are 2 individual events that haven't occurred yet. The highest team in to perform there, other than the teams that have already qualified, will get those 2 spots.
And when is the Nationals? When can we look forward to
February?
February. Right. So for Christmas, a new broom, would that be on the market?
I need new shoes.
New shoes. You have shoes for curling?
Yeah.
Especially you have
what was spikes?
Quarter inch of Teflon.
You
can slide, Goldie. Curling. Not spikes. Come on, buddy.
Curling heathen you are. You never watch curling. You know, I produce it on the BBC. Josh plays it, and you don't follow the sport at all, do you?
I don't. You're right. Completely right. Put my hand up and acknowledge
you want to know why? Because it's not a popular fantasy sport. I need to introduce Goldie to fantasy curling, which does exist. And then all of a sudden you're going to be like, should I go with
hardcore
shoe or should I go with botcher?
And you go, hurry, hardcore.
Eric, what about you, buddy? You've been all over Europe, Eastern Europe.
I'm busy. It's Champion Hockey League season, so I'm doing a lot of ice hockey across Europe. Tomorrow morning I'm off to Norway, which means when I'm trying to catch up on baseball scores, I'll be 6 hours ahead of the East Coast of North America instead of 5.
Great to hear you're busy, buddy. But safe travels, right? Don't overdo it. You're not as young as you used to be. You're not the athlete you once were.
Pints are 15 pounds a glass in Norway, so I'll be taking it easy.
What? 15?
It's expensive in Norway.
Now, before you ask, because I know you're both going to, I've just done 7 jobs in 6 days.
Oh, look at the time. They got to move on.
waffle.
No, go ahead, John. What are you up to next few days?
7 jobs in 6 days I've just done, including a flight to and from New York, where I went and worked the Berenberg Bank Gary Player Invitational, raised $750,000, guys.
It's America.
America. Unbelievable.
Do it in America,
absolutely.
Big.
Yep. I mean, and last night, Saturday night, I was helping the girls of Girls Aloud honor the memory of their fallen bandmate, Sarah Harding, of course, you know, died of breast cancer last year. And they've done an amazing thing last night, an amazing event. And we raised, the auction raised £337,000, which when you consider what's happening in the world is extraordinary. There were some amazing people there. And that will fund a whole year of research into why younger women are contracting breast cancer. So yeah, it's been a good week. I feel a bit tired, but I feel very positive about the week I've had. It's been fantastic, been amazing. Anyway, that's enough of me. Thank you for listening, guys. As always, a joy, boys. We are coming back for at least one more. Please promise me that we'll do worst case scenario, minimum roundup of the season at the end of the World Series. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. I say we do it every day if we can.
Hey, and with a little bit of luck, we might get Dave in for his first episode of the season. Wouldn't that be special?
Well, he hasn't. Yeah, he's been. It's been a while. And thank you much for Colin Murray for Commiserations to your Blue Jays, but
yes, thank you, Colin. Anyway, that's it from us. You've been listening to the Johnny and Josh Show, episode 7, season 3. Take very good care of yourselves. Until next time, bye bye.
And we leave you with
Chris
Ballou, 2001.
Randy Jr., Alex gone, Lou was here to carry on, but who was gonna hit home runs? The Mariners 2001, who was this fellow, Ichiro? They say he's great, we didn't know, from the land of the rising sun, the Mariners 2001. Into the season of unknowns, beat the A's first game at home, 1-0, and out in front. Mariners 2001, they won 11, dropping 4, hit a streak and won 9 more, 9 games up and they weren't done, the Mariners 2001. The bats were simply all on fire, the glove work in a word inspired, the pitching wouldn't be outdone, the Mariners 2001, 50 wins on June 14th, spectacular became routine, so there's 2 outs, they said so what, the Mariners 2001. Led by 20 in July, AL West was hung and dried. Was A-Rod having any fun? The Mariners 2001, 100 wins September 5. The record pace still alive. Fans went crazy in the sun. The Mariners 2001. In September, we were shaken to our knees, and baseball did its best to bring us back to normalcy. The M's then clinched with grace and style, a flag upon the field. They finished winning 116, their place in history sealed. Jamie Paul, Aaron Freddie, on the mound to pitch to Danny. Cass came in, the deal is done, the Mariners 2001. Infield Guillen, Bell and Boone, anchored by John Olerud. Cammy had a golden glove, the Mariners 2001. The bench had played beyond compare, McLemore and Javier. Nelson Rhodes had nasty stuff, the Mariners 2001. Once in a lifetime chance to see, among the best in history, it was a legendary run, Mariners 2001.